It is Wednesday, July 18th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, President Donald Trump praises his performance in office regarding Moscow.
There's been no president ever as tough as I have been on Russia.
The 12 members of the Thai football team who were rescued from a flooded cave appear before the news media. And a Washington, D.C. museum provides a glimpse of a new dinosaur display. It's all ahead. President Donald Trump Wednesday defended his actions regarding Moscow. He spoke before a White House cabinet meeting.
And we're doing very well, probably as well as anybody has ever done with Russia. And there's been no president ever as tough as I have been on Russia. All you have to do is look at the numbers, look at what we've done, look at sanctions, look at ambassadors not there, look, unfortunately, at what happened in Syria recently. And I think President Putin knows that better than anybody, certainly a lot better than the media. He understands it, and he's not happy about it, and he shouldn't be happy about it, because there's never been a president as tough on Russia as I have been.
Earlier Wednesday, Trump boasted on Twitter about his summit with Russian President Vladimir Putin. He said critics of his performance in Helsinki were suffering from Trump derangement syndrome. Trump wrote on Twitter that some people hate the fact that I got along well with President Putin of Russia. He further said they would rather go to war than see this. The president's Twitter comments came hours after he said he accepted the U.S. intelligence community's conclusion that Russia meddled in the 2016 presidential election, walking back his Monday comments embracing Putin's denial that Moscow had interfered. VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman was at the Monday news conference in Helsinki. I said to him that Trump seems shocked by the largely negative reaction to his performance at that appearance with Putin that it has received.
Right. It was surprising to a lot of people that the president was shocked, and he didn't seem to realize that there was any real issue with what he had said alongside Vladimir Putin in Helsinki until he got on Air Force One, switched on the television in the cabin, and also saw the stone faces of his aides, and then was able to determine what the feedback was.
It seems as though, and just on the outside, that the White House has almost kind of gone into a bit of a crisis mode over all this.
Well, obviously, once the president had made these comments, no one wanted to come out quickly and contradict him, and there was a bit of damage control that went on during the flight back to Washington. And then he read that statement reversing what he had said at the news conference, but then quickly added on his own ad lib comment, as he is known to do, saying, well, it also could have been someone else as well. So he sort of undermined very quickly the statement that had been prepared for him.
And the Republican reaction by members of Congress and the Senate has been very negative. You have someone like, say, John McCain, who's often critical of
right.
Trump. But you get people like Newt Gingrich and others that have been very, very critical.
Right. The former House Speaker has been a very strong supporter of the president, and his wife was appointed as the ambassador to the Holy See, the Vatican. So that was really remarkable to see Gingrich criticizing the president. Now, will the correction blaming this on a grammatical double negative that he meant to say and people didn't understand, will that persuade anyone? Perhaps those commentators on Fox News Channel, which are always very strongly supporting the president, and perhaps Gingrich, they might back off a little bit. There are some other members of Congress who might ease up. But still, we're seeing a sustained concern from some Republican members of Congress. And of course, the Democrats are not changing their tune at all.
There has been a lot of speculation, I guess so far it's speculation, between that one-on-one meeting between Trump and Putin. They were there alone except for their interpreters. Is there any indication as to what was discussed?
Not really. It's really remarkable that the two leaders were in the room for more than 2 hours just with their translators. Now, some Democrats on Capitol Hill are saying they want to subpoena the American translator to come in and testify. I don't think that's going to be successful, but that gives you an indication of the level of concern about it in this town.
Looking at the president's Twitter feed, I notice his latest tweet is about he's touting the success of the U.S. economy. It's almost as though he's wanting to switch the subject.
Well, the president tweets about the economy very frequently. That very much plays to his base. He then tends to perhaps initiate a new controversy on Twitter to move discussions in a different direction. He knows he can very easily capture cable news in this country by saying something controversial on Twitter. His base loves it. I don't think he expects that from these types of comments that he's looking to enlarge the base, but maintaining the base and then setting the discussion is very, very much in line with President Trump's savvy media approach, and it's what got him elected president, and he hopes get him reelected.
VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. Pakistani politician Imran Khan tells VOA he believes his party is well placed to win the polls. A Turkish court rules against a U.S. pastor's release. Ethiopia resumes commercial flights to Eritrea. And President Trump's top economic advisor accuses China's president of delaying a trade deal. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists say for the first 100,000 years or so after the Big Bang, there were only two elements in the universe, hydrogen and helium. It's kind of puzzling since helium is such a plentiful element in the universe that until recently, astronomers haven't been able to detect helium in any of the exoplanets found so far, despite a concentrated effort to look for it. But now a team of astronomers led by Jessica Spake, a PhD student at the UK's University of Exeter, have discovered helium in the atmosphere of an exoplanet called WASP-107b. WASP-107b is described as a super Neptune planet that circles an orange dwarf star 200 light years from Earth. The team made their discovery by using the Hubble Space Telescope's Wide Field Camera 3. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we look at the current state of the U.S. economy. One week after their dramatic rescue from a flooded cave complex, the 12 teenage members of a Thai football team met with reporters to describe their ordeal. The Wild Boars team members were discharged Wednesday morning from a hospital in Chiang Rai and then met with reporters. Dressed in their team uniforms, the boys filed into the government building and sat before the cameras. Reporter Steve Sanford is in Chiang Rai. He tells me about the news conference.
They were brought before quite a packed house of media, international as well as the local media, and there were friends and family, officials were also there. Yeah, so it was quite a joyful moment. Kids looked like they were in good spirits. They were laughing and joking. They were kicking the soccer balls around that they had been given by the officials when they came into the town hall, and they looked in pretty good health. Certainly a lot better than 9 days into the cave drama when the British rescuers found them. They were quite thin.
Do medical officials feel that they will be okay or they will have any long-term effects from their ordeal?
That's an interesting question. They basically had been feeding them a lot of healthy foods and bringing them back up to try to get to the level they were before they went in the cave. At the same time, there were concerns about their mental health, which was refreshing to see, I guess, especially in a part of the world such as we are in. They had brought a psychiatrist along to look at the questions, actually, that the media were told to submit yesterday. So basically, the media submitted the questions a day ahead of this press conference, and then the questions were looked over for their sensitivity for the children. And the psychiatrist was also looking at the questions, and I guess they picked from that.
Did the boys talk about their ordeal? I mean, how they kept their spirits up? Were they able to eat any food while they were in the cave, at least before the rescuers found them?
I mean, they had brought some snacks into the cave when they originally went. It was planned the Wednesday before the Saturday practice, according to the coach. And he posted it on Facebook that they were going to go in for a little bit of exploring in the Saturday afternoon following their practice. But they got to a certain point where the water levels were rising and the coach had turned to go back. And basically, they realized that they were sort of locked in now from the water. Yeah, so it was basically a plan to just to go in there after the practice, but it turned out to be a lot longer.
Now, I believe one of the boys speaks English, and he was able to communicate with the British divers that first found them.
That's right. He's quite an accomplished student at the local school in May Sai, and he spoke a few different languages. I believe he was one of the team members that was originally from Burma. Yeah, he had a high grade average at his school, and he could speak English. So it was quite refreshing when the diver spoke to the group in English, and then he responded.
Did the boys speak at all about the former Thai Navy SEAL Saman Gunan who died during the rescue operation?
Right. Actually, they did. In fact, following this ordeal and the press conference, they're planning to be ordained as novice monks for 9 days, I believe starting on July 26th. And part of this process is to honor the fallen Navy Thai SEAL diver who gave his life while trying to deliver oxygen to the group. So they are quite aware of this situation, and they're going to be commemorating his life with his ordination at this monastery.
And did the coach speak during the news conference?
Yes, the coach spoke quite a bit during the press conference. He was also speaking about some of the regrets. I mean, all of the kids were asked, you know, what did you learn from this experience? And of course, most of them were replying that, you know, they would give more thought before doing something. And in the coach's case, he said that he basically, you know, it was a big experience for him, but he would think in the future more before doing something like this.
Steve Sanford reporting from Chiang Rai, Thailand. The chairman of the U.S. Central Bank, Jerome Powell, told lawmakers Tuesday the U.S. is on track for years of steady growth. He even indicated the Trump administration's trade policies could have a positive outcome as long as they are not long-lasting. Powell testified before the Senate Banking Committee.
An average of 215,000 net new jobs per month were created each month in the first half of this year. The unemployment rate edged down 0.1% over the first half of the year to 4.0% in June, near the lowest level of the past two decades. Incoming data show that, alongside the strong job market, the U.S. economy has grown at a solid pace so far this year. The value of goods and services produced in the economy, or GDP, rose at a moderate annual rate of 2% in the first quarter after adjusting for inflation. However, the latest data suggests that economic growth in the second quarter has been considerably stronger than in the first. My colleagues on the FOMC and I expect that with appropriate monetary policy, the job market will remain strong and inflation will stay near 2% over the next several years. Of course, economic outcomes that we experience often turn out to be a good deal stronger or weaker than our best forecast. Overall, we see the risk of the economy unexpectedly weakening as roughly balanced with the possibility of the economy growing faster than we currently anticipate.
But Powell acknowledged tariffs like the ones the administration has levied on steel and aluminum imports and on Chinese goods were the wrong approach and could be felt if they remain in place for too long. Gary Huffbauer is a non-resident senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. He tells International Edition's Victor Beatty the latest signs of economic activity in June show great numbers in industrial and manufacturing production and mining output.
I mean, the economy is doing extremely well. The U.S. is doing much better than other advanced countries, in fact, better than most countries. The concern is that, you know, maybe a slowdown elsewhere will slow the U.S. economy. There are two indicators which suggest that that's not impossible. One is the price of copper, which has been a very good weather vane over the decades, really. It's been down quite a bit. And the other is the long-term bond yield, the 30-year bond yield, which, while short-term interest rates are rising, the long-term rate has not been rising. In fact, it's even fallen a little bit lately, which suggests that people are cautious. Investors are cautious about the state of the economy, you know, going forward the next couple of years. So those are flags on the horizon. There are always some flags, but those are the ones today, which I'm sure the Fed is paying attention to.
Unemployment at 4%, considered maximum employment. Why all the good news? What is the cause of it?
Well, the main cause of the good news is the tax bill, which was passed last year, or early, you know, went into effect early this year in 2018. A big reduction in tax rates for business. Secondly, it's a big fiscal stimulus to the overall economy, a huge fiscal stimulus. So the economy is getting the jolt from increased deficit spending. And I think those are the two reasons that we're seeing these really great numbers.
There was a lot of concern expressed in the Senate Banking Committee Tuesday about tariffs and trade tensions. Mr. Powell himself suggested that ultimately he hopes for a world of lower tariffs. He said, obviously, that tariffs is absolutely the wrong approach. Said the U.S. would feel it at the national level if levies remain in place.
He's absolutely correct. And Congress, or many congressmen and senators, are quite concerned that the tariff agenda of President Trump will undo the wonderful things that are happening because of his tax package, which was enacted. And that's a real concern on the Hill. You know, the trade agenda could really hurt the U.S. economy going into the second half of this year and into 2019.
At the same time, the president of the European Commission, Jean-Claude Juncker, is due in Washington next week for talks with President Trump. Gary Huffbauer suggests a possible cut in the European Union's 10% tariff on auto imports may be on the agenda in a bid to avert a new round of U.S. duties, this time on European auto imports. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter, every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
This is International Edition. The fossilized skeleton of a ferocious Tyrannosaurus rex dinosaur will be on exhibit next year in the new fossil hall at the Museum of Natural History here in Washington. Excavated in Montana, it's one of the largest and most complete T-Rex skeletons ever discovered. The dinosaur, called the nation's T-Rex, will become part of a larger showcase that explores billions of years of life on Earth. VOA's Deborah Block takes us on a sneak peek.
Pieces of the giant T-Rex arrived in large crates. Inside one of them, two giant thigh bones, another containing the animal's huge skull, complete with razor-sharp teeth. But dinosaur curator Matthew Carano tells us this dinosaur head is a replica because the original bones are too fragile for display.
An adult Tyrannosaurus, such as this specimen here, they tend to be 40 to 45 feet long. They stand about 16 feet tall, and they can weigh anywhere from 5 to 10 tons. It does have these fantastic 6-inch teeth that we know were capable of punching through solid bone.
The nation's T-Rex is not only important because it contains many of the original bones, but because it also gave scientists new clues about the meat-eating dinosaur.
It was the first specimen where the arm had been known. So we always knew T-Rex had a very small arm, but we'd never really seen it all.
Paleontologists have learned a lot about dinosaurs in recent years, including their age. This one was just a teenager when it died.
By the time they were about 20, they were pretty much full-sized. And after that, although they, you know, got a little bit longer and a little bit taller, mostly they just got bigger. So they would sort of bulk up. Again, not all that different from the way we grow as humans.
Unlike the museum's dark fossil hall of the past, this new one will show off more scientifically accurate depictions of how dinosaurs lived. Kirk Johnson, head of the museum, says more than 700 specimens will be on display.
But in addition to the skeletons and the fossils, we'll have beautiful art, we'll have incredible interpretation panels, we'll have digital interactives, we'll have all the things that make all those real things accessible to audiences of all ages.
Johnson hopes the millions of visitors who will come to visit the new exhibit, when it opens in June next year, will find it both informative and exciting.
And if they're young, I hope that they understand that they can become agents for the future, that they can understand things themselves, they can become scientists, they can become positive forces for good in the planet, and think about the future.
Deborah Block, VOA News, Washington.
Sounds like a very interesting exhibit. Well, that is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has said the Iranian regime's response to protests in Iran shows the country's leadership is running scared.
Thousands have been jailed arbitrarily, and at least dozens have been killed. As seen from the hijab protests, the brutal men of the regime seem to be particularly terrified by Iranian women who are demanding their rights.
Recent events appear to confirm this view. State television broadcast a video of a young teenage girl being interrogated, presumably by an official. The girl is tearfully admitting to breaking moral norms for posting clips of herself on Instagram dancing. Dozens of women have been arrested in the last few months for peacefully protesting against the compulsory hijab. One such protester, Shaparak Shajarizadeh, reportedly was sentenced to 20 years in prison. In a video posted online on July 9th, she said she has left Iran to escape such injustice. Ms. Shajarizadeh's lawyer, Nazreen Sotoudeh, who defended her and others peacefully protesting the compulsory hijab, called such arrests a manifestation of violence against women. In June, Sotoudeh herself was arrested and taken to Evin prison to serve out a 5-year sentence for crimes which, at the time of her arrest, were not disclosed. Another prominent female human rights defender and lawyer, Zainab Tohari, was also detained in June and charged with spurious crimes like disturbing public opinion and spreading propaganda against the system for publicly expressing her opinion that her client, who had been hastily executed, did not receive sufficient fair trial guarantees. Iranian women are responding to the regime's brutality with the courage they have shown for years. As one example, in support of the teenage dancer arrested and interrogated by the authorities, many have written messages deploring her treatment or have posted videos of themselves dancing using the hashtag #DancingIsNotACrime. As Secretary of State Pompeo has said, the United States will continue to advocate tirelessly for the Iranian people. The regime must improve how it treats its citizens. It must protect the human rights of every Iranian.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.